This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hi there, welcome to a new episode of the Industrial AI Podcast. My name is Peter Seeberg and I'm your host. Today, I'm going to be talking to Norbert Jung. He's the CEO of Bosch Connected Industry. And Norbert and I are going to talk about manufacturing co-intelligence. Hi, Norbert.
Hello, Peter. It's great to be in your podcast. Thanks for inviting me.
You're very welcome. Norbert, some, or I believe many of our listeners will already have recognized the name of your company, Bosch. But let's first start with you. Please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Okay. Yeah, look, for all my career, you know, I've been fascinated about technology and the question, how can you apply it and how can you bring benefit to companies and to users and eventually do something good for people, you know, and improve their quality of life, you know. And I like to think forward. I've always liked to design things and lead things. And right now, there is no better place for this than the industrial space. Just today, I saw it in the news this morning, Tesla have announced that they turn away from car making and they go into human robots.
Oh, really? Oh, that's new to me, what you're announcing. Now, depending on when we're going to be hearing this, it may be most of our listeners may know, but at the very moment, I do not know. Okay.
Anyway, you know, it's the total proof, you know, that we're at a strategic inflection point, you know, where rules of technology and rules of business are being rewritten. And I'm so happy to be in the center of this, you know. I started my career in sales. I still think this is a great education. And then I moved into product management and business management. I worked for Aviva for a decade. I incubated a new product there, Aviva Process Simulation, and brought this to the market. And then, you know, today this is a good recurring revenue business for them, I suppose. And then I moved to Siemens, worked for them for a while, was one of the founding members of Siemens Grid Software. They're heavily focused on the electric energy sector, which is obviously growing. And then about 2 years ago now, Bosch came and they said, hey, you know, we have a product business unit, software business unit, and we don't quite know what to do with it. Would you like to lead this? And I said, yes. And in retrospect, you know, transformation sometimes days are tough, but it's been a ride and I really enjoy my job. So.
Sounds great. Next, then let's talk a little bit more about Bosch and very interesting how you started off presenting yourself. You said, you know, doing something good for people. And I thought of immediately without knowing the person that invented or that that started Bosch. When was that? 100 years ago? Maybe even more? I don't know. So I'm not sure you're going to make that link. Nevertheless, for those listeners maybe, and also for me, maybe a couple of sentences on the company Bosch, and then maybe a little bit more about specifically what you do, Bosch Connected Industry.
You know, first of all, Bosch is a super size company, and it's hard to speak for the entire company. Obviously, it's strongly rooted in automotive. We've been growing through acquisition of Johnson Controls in the home comfort space. We do, you know, all those products that everybody knows, right? The dishwasher and the power tool, you know. But I think what is maybe interesting is the difference in the culture. This is a foundation-owned business, right? So when you work there, you eventually think that you're working for a foundation that is doing good for society and good for people and not for a financial investor that, you know, is interested in the money alone, right? That's very different to the companies I worked before that were all stock-listed businesses. Like myself, when you come from a pure play software background, really, what is interesting is that when you do software in Bosch, you really see how it makes actually move things. I've been at a production line where they make the motors for the e-bikes. You know, Bosch has a very big business in e-bike, obviously, right? Many people know that. And they're using our MES software on that line. And it kind of makes you, you know, it's exciting when those people at the line, they talk about it and how it helps them, you know, work through their day and how it supports them in their jobs. You know, yeah, the unit I work for, you know, we have delivered 150 manufacturing execution systems to plants around the world, a huge heritage. And it's a software and production powerhouse, Bosch Connected Industry. And we, you know, conducted a strategy process. And, you know, we think that we can add even more value with data and AI. We are in the center of this, you know. But the unit also, we have delivered 700 million digital twins of products, you know, harmonizing the data across the product lifecycle for those. And our team is really deeply skilled in manufacturing and software. So that's a great place.
Okay, sounds great. That's what we're going to be talking about more. And I do recall that as we connected a couple of weeks back, I think it was really late to the game. I had just bought for myself, my spouse, an e-bike, including the Bosch batteries and the Bosch motor, I guess. So I was already suggesting that maybe one way or the other you had been connected, as you're now confirming, to the production line. And the second thing is, yeah, I do believe that maybe people closer, would mean maybe closer, like in the German speaking market, would be aware of the fact that Bosch is like this, you call it a foundation-based company. So not family, not public, but foundation-based. Maybe many of the people that are further away, international, are not aware of that. Let's see if maybe in the course of our discussion, we hear one or two things where maybe people then realize that one or two things are a little bit different. Now, we're talking today about manufacturing co-intelligence. Tell us what that is. So first introduction, please.
You know, it's evident. And, you know, we're talking here about industrial AI podcast, right? I suppose many of the listeners, all the listeners will be using ChatGPT or Gemini or some Gen AI tool, you know, for individual productivity every day. And it's evident that agents in some way or the other will change the way the software world works. And manufacturing agents in the manufacturing sector will fundamentally transform the manufacturing software space. So no more rigid manufacturing execution systems, no longer the divide between IT and OT. Data will rule the shop floor and productivity will be increased. And if agents and robots actually are, you know, physical agents, you know, this will redefine the way how humans are working and thinking in the production process. And that I think can give a real productivity boost, in particular also in Europe, you know, where we need that. And everybody agrees, right, that only if you have quality data going into those systems, this will lead to good results. But say if a system hallucinates 1% of the time, you know, one time in 100, that's 10 times in 10,000, you know, in 1,000 queries. And in an industrial context, that is really not good enough. You know, in the industrial context, we're talking about parts per million quality, what is an acceptable mistake rate. It's a huge contrast. So how do you go from a showcase pilot project in manufacturing that looks impressive at the first glance to a real scale and to a real productivity gain and fulfilling on the economic promise? You know, so these are some of the questions that we are trying to answer with manufacturing co-intelligence.
Very good. Now, you took over, you said, 2 years ago. I don't actually mean specifically the environment that you came in, but more in general. You've been at a number of places. Let's look at the last 10 years. So is it fair to say that maybe like 10 years ago, we started also an industry a little bit stronger with data, algorithms, machine learning. So what is kind of, before we then start talking in detail about this manufacturing co-intelligence, what is the status? What were the things that we have had in the last, 5 to 10 years? So where are we starting from?
You know, if I go back 10 years or even a little longer, obviously there was a huge, you know, I guess, what do we call it now? Conventional AI hype, right? And data science and so forth. And that certainly has increased productivity. And we've seen cases with efficiency gains of like 20% or something, improving downtime, improving OEE and some of the manufacturing KPIs. If you think about it, then really it's become the standard for predictive maintenance. You know, you put a sound sensor on a rotating equipment and it will tell you, you know, that pattern is different before it breaks, right? So you can do the maintenance before it breaks, right? Also in quality control, in visual inspection, right? You know, identifying the bad one from many good ones, this is something where AI has, you know, is really excels, and that has become the real standard. In many other areas, there were inflated expectations, right? And those haven't real proven consistently valuable, let me say, right? What's changing the game now with generative AI is that it's becoming a catalyst for manufacturing. For the first time, AI can engage with, you know, complex engineering challenges, it can reason across diverse data sets, and it can support better and faster human decision making. You know, traditional machine learning and AI has been automated on narrow, repetitive tasks. And agentic AI can go further, right? It can, you know, observe, reason, recommend actions, or, you know, always stay aligned with human goals and oversights. So I think that's the difference. You know, in Davos a few weeks back, right, I think I read something from Bain & Company, half of the CEOs are saying getting AI right is decisive for their job.
Right. Yeah, I heard that Davos becoming, feels like maybe more than a political, still political, global political, whereas the world moving, it sounded like it had become like an AI conference. Is that correct? You were there, I believe.
Well, CES certainly was. Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So can agentic then work with or without human intervention?
Yeah. You know, sometimes you see visions of, you know, agentic AI will enable lights out factories, you know, no more humans in the factories, right? Sometimes in the future, all right, it might be possible. But, you know, I also say this, as humans, we tend to overestimate the tech potential in the short term and underestimate the tech potential in the long term. And I think it's the same here. Our current understanding is that agentic AI is not replacing humans. It's rather expanding and assisting us, right? On the shop floor, you must have processes, experts, and the meaningful support of agentic, well-aligned and jointly evolving and improving together. We always think of human in the loop. You know, on the shop floor, you know, we see it possible. We see it possible when you have taken your factory already, I don't know, to 97-98% OEE, then you might find the last few percentages with agentic. But then if you include the support functions, you know, planning, quality, logistics, maintenance, it's very clear that this is going co-intelligence. So we like to pursue the idea of manufacturing co-intelligence with the human in the loop. And I think this will go on for quite a while.
That's the topic here. And I know that I'm going to be finishing off on this very topic, that I'm going to be asking you how you see the future, you know, the next whatever 10 years of who will be doing what. What is the job for humans? What is the job for machines? What is the job for agents, etc.? But maybe a little bit already now as a little bit of an idea. So if you say there is this co-intelligence, but you also believe in agents, so can you kind of say what maybe more typically already in the use cases, maybe we talk about them later, today agents will take care of, and what is then maybe the more typical job still today of a human?
I mean, we're just at the beginning, right? And if you talk about use cases, maybe let me describe one of them that we have deployed in several of the Bosch plants and also deployed at SICK AG. And that is, we call it Shopfloor AI Agent. And I use this as an example, you know, because it really delivers on that promise of agentic AI, right? It solves a very common problem in the industry that many companies have. It's far beyond pilot stage, but it's in productive use on many lines. And I can give you a nice anecdote. And it delivers on this promise of, I don't know, tenfold improvement, right? And also measuring the benefits, we think it saves around €800,000 per plant per year. And the way that works is that, you know, picture a scenario where it's 2 a.m. at night and the line has an unplanned outage. The equipment experts are scarce and only one or two or entry-level experts are available at night. And alone, that expert would park the problem and the line would not run until 9 a.m. And with the agent, supported with the agent, the expert can now access to the know-how of all colleagues from the past few years, can tap into the Bosch know-how that we put into our agents. And like this is fully empowered to fix the problem immediately and to bring that line back up to speed, you know, in the middle of the night. So, and then on the operator side, that operator previously filed a very basic ticket, you know, machine broken, machine fixed. But now you have a full detailed report of, you know, what was wrong and how the fix would work. And technologically, you asked, how does this work? So we're leveraging a multiple IT system to capture heritage plant knowledge, combine that with the Bosch production know-how. And this is, you know, available then like ChatGPT, you know, or like Gemini or any other LLM within any language, right? And this alone is already a huge benefit to many companies. You know, that's a case that really works. That's a very common problem. Experts being available at night and you make big gains. And also during the day, of course.
Right. And in this case, it's the human who takes the overall responsibility and is being supported by agents. Let's see if that's the same. There's two other use cases we will be looking at in a moment. I'm going to walk back one step. I'm going to be asking you first, maybe you can share in what areas you believe companies that proactively integrate agentic AI are going to gain a decisive advantage.
Oh, wow. I mean, come on, look, you must look at every function, at every part of your business, you know, being it accelerated innovation cycles, reducing costs, you know, making your production also more flexible for mass customization, I think also a big trend. Certainly resilient, adaptive supply chains, you know, with all the changes on the geopolitical landscape, that's a big requirement. Sustainability and also very important workforce transformation. Yeah, I think, you know, like all functions of a company. And let's say one example, it's not from my particular domain, right? We focus on manufacturing, but one example from engineering, I saw at a conference the other day, and I thought this was really also what I call co-intelligence, right? So this was a company that is doing ventilators, and they really thought that the blades of their ventilators, they're optimized, right? They're perfect. They're maxed out in terms of efficiency.
They thought, right?
Right. You know, because they've been there for a while, right? And then they started and gave a Gen AI tool, they gave them their best 10 designs together with a picture of the wing of an owl, right? Which is known for its efficiency. And then new designs came out, right? And the shapes of the blade now no longer had this straight line, but they had a kind of a swung line, like an S-curve-ish line, right? And this then pushes the boundaries again a few percent, right? Making them, you know, I guess what you're looking for in a ventilator, right? More throughput and less noise. And the tool used 60,000, you know, triggered 60,000 simulations of their engineering tool, if I remember, remember correctly. And, you know, that's what I mean, right? Co-intelligence, where you use the tool to augment the human capabilities and come up with something really new. But the fundamental idea of give it the 10 best designs with the wing of an owl, that was a human idea.
We do follow engineering in a manufacturing environment as well. And so the other thing is like, just ask the algorithm, ask the AI, whatever. Maybe it's a typical reinforcement learning, maybe it's an alpha fold kind of thing, but not in our environment ask it to build a new protein, but whatever, to build a new ventilator. Yeah. Okay, very good. So what can we use? I asked in the beginning where we're standing, but we have been doing data-driven maintenance, quality control. You talked about that a little bit. Can we still use that for, you know, establishing, building agentic AI, or is the approach a complete new one? Are we throwing things away that we've been doing for the last, 5 years?
You know, anything that you've been doing in the area of data, you know, is good and useful and a good fundamental, a good starting point, right, for anything agentic. Those companies that have spent effort on getting their data right are in a better place, certainly. When I think about data, it's rather different today, right? We call it actually the data growth paradox. You know, every industrial company has more data than ever before, right? We have ERP systems, we've got product lifecycle management systems, manufacturing execution systems, we've got IoT, you've got data from your partners, from your ecosystem, from your suppliers, from your customers. And the paradox is really that while data, you know, the volume of data explodes, the actual value we get from it somehow doesn't. And that's, it doesn't grow at the same pace. And in fact, it often stagnates or even declines. And that happens because every new digital initiative, whether it's a new use case or a data connection or an AI project, they end up describing, integrating locally the same assets, the same products, the same machines again, over and over, right? So each team builds its own mappings, its own models, its own use case, own version of the truth. So even though we are producing more data, we're not producing more meaning and not more benefits. And that's why digital twin initiatives, they remain local POCs. That's why rollout takes so long. And that's why integrating new factories or new partners still feels like starting over. And we keep solving more and more through integration. It actually gets worse. Every new connection recreates the same translation work. And it's like, it's like talking 5 different languages, right? And agreeing again and again over a common one. That's why data projects don't scale. Yeah, often.
But at least it sounds like the humans have to talk to each other. They have to be aware. I mean, I've been there many, many times in my past. They have to be aware what is the saying? If A only knew what B has, in case of Bosch, if Bosch only knew what Bosch has,
if Bosch would know we know what you mean.
But that's the same for all, especially, I guess, the bigger you get. Very good. So at least the humans should be, or there should be systems in place that not everybody starts from the beginning. You shared the shop floor AI agent as a use case with us. Is there another one, too, that you can share with our listeners that we get an idea what it is that you are currently or have started to work on from an AI agent perspective?
Maybe I make an example, right, of 2 personas. One is Frederick. He's our quality engineer. And his job is to decide whether a failed part from the field should be covered by warranty or not. The gold standard would be that you make a physical inspection of the part and run a root cause analysis. But that's obviously slow and very expensive. So in reality, Frederick often has to decide quickly. And sometimes he takes decisions based on experience or gut feel. So Frederick wants to do better. He builds a data-driven solution, a digital warranty assistant, right? And his idea is simple. He uses data from the customer and internal systems to make smarter, better warranty decisions. So he goes out and he fetches data from the field, device identifiers, descriptions, diagnostics. He fetches production data, right? Sensor data, process parameters, end-of-line tests, traceability, subcomponents, production steps, historian data, engineering context, error tables, And then the reality hits, right? He doesn't know what data exists. He doesn't know where it sits. He doesn't know how to access it. And even when he finds it, the data doesn't match. Identifiers differ from different systems. Color meanings are unclear. Is 38 degrees for a temperature, or is it 38 minutes, or is it a test score, you know? And that's because all the data sits in different databases, come from different places, you know, maybe some of it are in PDF files or email attachments. But, you know, he manages to integrate and the results are big, right? He takes better decisions before physical inspection. He has enough historian data once he's done it, right, to even train an AI system and gets applause in the company. Project worked, right? And the thing is that there is, you know, here's a twist, right? So when a second person, like a product manager, we call her Justine, she's a product manager, when she comes around and she says, oh, you know, what if we could proactively warn customers when the field data suggests an upcoming damage, like proactively, right? And she needs many of the same data sources that Frederick already interpreted, but she doesn't know that Fred did this. So she starts from scratch, right? But then she eventually meets Fred in the canteen and they all get excited. And Fred says, oh, I've done it before and you can reuse it and so forth. But Fred's solution is like a black box, right? She can't easily understand the data without talking to Fred or other domain experts. The data is still heterogeneous and tightly coupled to the original implementation. And it's even hard to extend to new data sources. And that's classic non-scalable IT integration, a data pipeline built for one use case that then becomes a silo, basically. And that's kind of the problem that we address with our data solutions. We call it Bosch Semantic Stack. That's the problem we solve.
Now, if you then, and I assume that you are, or people in your organization are driving exactly those, what should I say, maybe coordinations or whatever, you want to be somewhere in a couple of years, is there a couple of criteria maybe that you are sharing with your people or that you together come up with? You say, okay, now if we're going to be going for specific use cases, what would be the selection criteria on which basis you would say, this is one that we want to keep, that we want to go for, and the other one is one, for whatever reason, you do not want to look at?
First of all, anything that you've built, you don't want to rip it out, right? So if that adds value, you know, that's probably fine. We just say, you know, as you go forward, right, build a scenario where you basically don't start from scratch over and over, right? The center idea that we promote is a digital twin of the product. So thinking about the entire product lifecycle, engineering, production, operations, even recycling. And those digital twins are discoverable then in we call it digital twin registry, which is like a telephone book, right, of what twins already exist. And so, and like this, anybody who is building a new use case can look up if that has been already interpreted before and call into that phone line, into that source data system. So in that twin, you've got structured data from engineering point of view, from production point of view, operations point of view, basically any kind of view that is relevant. And, you know, this is then what we mean with semantic context, right? The meaning of data, which makes it much easier to reuse and much more efficient, much more cost efficient to then build new use cases and become a data-driven company, right?
So how do you get the semantics? Because I was going to ask you exactly that. We talk about data, we talk about Fred seeing, as he was the first one, maybe values, but had no idea initially what the meaning was. So how... what is the meaning? No, what is the importance? What is the importance of semantics for agentic AI?
You know, first of all, how to get to those semantics, right? We have the templates for the industries that we serve. And this is not replicating the data lakes and the data sources. It's like an information model in between, a layer in between that gives the context, right? So it's a very lightweight element that is very powerful. And we've done, like to answer your question, we've done tests inside Bosch, you know, making a LLM query prompt on semantically enriched data versus from the source data. And just the quality of response that you get is so much higher. It's like 3 to 5 times higher, we think, in our assessments that we have done. And very clear, you know, it's obvious, right? If you give it good input data, that is where there is context, where there is meaning to it, where it's explained, obviously it's easier for the LLM to give a good response, and the likelihood of hallucination is massively, you know, is decreased.
So that sounds like semantic understanding or semantic information made available for LLMs or for agents is like a, sounds like a prerequisite. It's like you're saying it's so much better. In, you know, you've seen it from your own tests that if I'm hearing correctly, you say, well, you know, you can't do it in an industrial grade environment, as you said, where we have like parts per million that are not along the lines of the quality that we're looking for. Can you confirm that? You know, now you've realized that.
Well, I want to jump in, and it's not a prerequisite. It's not a prerequisite, but it helps, right? And let's say in this example of the shop floor agent that I described, we're tapping into the data sources of our customers on their production line, the ones that they have, right? So we fit perfectly into their IT/OT landscape. And we also bring in the Bosch production know-how, right? So we have pre-configured, pre-trained that agent so that the quality of response is just so much better if, you know, we're in a lucky place, right? We have so many production lines and we have a documented production know-how. We can use that, and that is a great advantage.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you right now, I guess we're all hearing all these days, weeks, everybody moving into robotics worlds. And so we have big tech. You just mentioned Tesla. Without going into the details, there's in the meantime 100 companies. We have the industrial robots since 50 years. Now we get all the humanoid robots, and everybody agrees that we're going to need some kind of world model. And what it is that we need is the data. And so I think there is this agreement on whoever has the, if we're talking industrial, the industrial data, it's like a gold mine. Is that something you can confirm? You say yes, because we have all these manufacturing lines. We have this, where I'm from in the past, there was like, I don't know how you call it in English. it's when you have water areas and people would make it dry. And they would call that the black gold, I believe. So is these days the manufacturing data that you sit on with all these manufacturing lines, are they a kind of gold, so to say, for agenting AI to be able to work?
Yes. I mean, many people say this, right? Data is the new gold. And yeah, yes, it's a big advantage. It's a big advantage to be in a company like Bosch, right? We have the Bosch, you know, we have the data. We can just walk across the street and we have, you know, a plant and we can test our systems. We have machines in place from all kinds of suppliers. And Bosch has been really good over the years, you know, to document production know-how as well, right? How to design a production line, how to continuously improve a production line. And we use all of that. It's all available at our fingertips. And that helps us a whole lot to make good, you know, industrial grade systems, you know, industrial grade, right? The big difference between a showcase and a system that actually works, that you can roll out, that delivers financial benefits.
That's the term we agree on. That's the term we've been using ourselves here as well, industrial grade. Okay, so already we hear that many things are possible. You say specific approaches are not prerequisite, but you seem to be learning all the time, and you have a couple of great use cases now. And as I said, in the end, I'm going to be asking you for how you're going to see the world in 5 or 10 years. But let's say, what is today what you say the limits of agentic AI?
Well, look, so first of all, it's this unpredictability, right? Hallucination, unlike rule-based systems, agentic AI doesn't always provide the same answer. And we have to make those systems smart and constrained such that within a certain context, certain limits, it provides good answers. For safety critical environments, you know, compliance testing, you know, this is hard to imagine that there isn't, you know, unpredictability, right? It can be very risky. It also makes traceability difficult. Think of regulated industries where you have to back up and document your decisions. That's also where, you know, that's where you need human in the loop, right? You can get a recommendation from the system, but the human must approve that this is good, right? Another limitation would be, you know, in the context, or rather the lack of context, right? Agentic AI struggles to understand human, environmental, ethical dimensions that shape real world decisions. And that's why we promote this idea of co-intelligence, right? We always think human in the loop for right now, and we don't see that changing so quickly. For me, it reminds me a little bit of automated driving. You know, we talk about automated driving already for a while. Well, I guess, if you say Tesla is now changing to robotics, I think they've given up, right? They were the first ones that said, you know, we're going to deliver self-driving cars. And yes, they do work, but it's very hard. It's very big effort, right, to get there. And I think it would be the same for the kinds of questions that we are trying to answer. But also limitations to agentic AI. I think, you know, it's also the cost. You know, I guess there's debate over the energy consumption and, you know, agentic AI companies making money, you know, the big ones. Many think that they can just go and access LLMs and maybe a workflow package and go with it. But doing it yourself, while it sounds appealing at first, I think is really difficult. You've got, you know, you think you've got full control. You think you have lower costs all over and you use your internal teams, but the reality tells a different story. You know, this landscape is moving so fast, especially LLMs evolving kind of overnight. Your internally built agents must still give the same answer. You know, if there is a new version of your LLM, and you realize the pace that these are coming out, your system must deliver the same answer, right? We think that agentic systems are just like other software systems. They need the same compliance testing, open source compliance. They must be monitored. They must be documented. They need the cloud infrastructure, has to be updated, has to be tracked, integrated. It has to stay secure and compatible. Cybersecurity, you know, can't wait. You must keep those systems safe. And that's really the difference between an innovation project and a showcase project and an industrial scale rollout. And I think really only if you get that right, then you're going to have those economic gains that people are expecting from such a technology.
Right. So you mentioned autonomous driving, which is probably then comparable with maybe the lights out factories kind of, but you don't see them soon, right? What is then the type of systems that you instead maybe expect? What is the structure of the systems that you expect to see that you are building today?
So the systems that we are building today, they always check back with the user, right? So they provide advice, and when they do take action, and we have multi-agent systems that take action, they always check back with the user, you know, is this what you want to do, right? This is the recommendation of what is the next step. Do you really want to do it? And as our confidence and, you know, increases, we'll maybe check back lesser, you know, less frequently. And the status that you really move lights out, I think, is far away. So we want to automate, but we want to keep the human in the loop in control for right now.
Right. So we've been talking about the Bosch approach in manufacturing co-intelligence. We had the first introduction. If we move a little bit more detail, what would you say are the three structural components of exactly this co-intelligence as you're going for?
Oh, well, you get me talking, right? So manufacturing co-intelligence is for discrete manufacturers by large. Also, could be also batch, but by large. Our customers They have fundamental challenges. They must reduce their cost often, right? Become operationally better. They have an aging workforce problem, right? Skilled labor goes into retirement and more junior ones have to come up to speed, and they suffer from the variabilities in the supply chains and want to become more resilient. And basically, we are building on all of this heritage that we have, right? So we've done so many production systems, so many digital twins, and our manufacturing co-intelligence offering is, on the one hand side, a data offering, a semantic data management offering. On the other hand side, an agentic AI offering. And like we discussed, those two are really synergetical. In our offer, we also include best-in-class MES, so deterministic systems, like shop floor performance tools, condition monitoring, process anomaly, conventional AI-based tools. We think that they're best in class and differentiated. But really, the core offering is agentic AI and data. And yeah, what to say about it? Agentic AI, we talked a little bit, like on the one hand, we have, we pre-configure use cases, like I described for the case with SICK AG shop floor I mentioned, and also many Bosch plants. When the line goes, when you have experts, to support experts, we basically try to pre-configure those kinds of use cases that we think are, address a common problem. And we also realize they must fit, smoothly into any IT/OT landscape of our customer. So currently we are at a stage where we need 2-3 days to bring those use cases productive, and our pricing model is kind of consumption based. So it's very efficient to get started. And we have a whole pipeline of these use cases, multi-agent, primarily on the shop floor, in maintenance, in quality, and the manufacturing core domains. And then on the agentic side, we want to take it further. Our customers have the best ideas of what use cases might improve their business. So our advice is, before you get started, know what KPI you want to improve. And those customers that will focus on a KPI, improve that KPI, they will also see then measurable economic improvements. So we are just preparing a agentic framework that will make it really easy for customers to deploy their own use cases, easy, quick, with confidence, and it will allow to connect existing data sources. The Bosch production know-how will be automatically integrated, and like this, they can bring agentic use cases, on the line into production, fast, easy, and focus on generating value versus kind of trying to make a construction site of all the components, technical components. Yeah, and on the data side, we have a semantic data management approach, like the Bosch Semantic Stack, and that is for providing, kind of transforming the raw data from the data sources into valuable, semantically enriched data stream, eventually a product digital twin. And so it unifies, harmonizes data across the product lifecycle. When you do that, quality managers can take quality decisions, data-driven quality decisions. Compliance managers can do their reporting. Product managers can incorporate data from the field into their decision-making. Engineering can get feedback on how to improve the designs, and data starts to scale. And that's what we are also after.
Perfect. No, but we need to come to a close. We've almost been talking for about an hour. I'm sure we could talk another hour. Now, so I'm coming to this point where I'm going to be asking you to look a little bit into the future, where you, I think I've understood, and I assume that the listeners have heard you talk, and you're clearly supporting this idea of manufacturing co-intelligence. So you're saying there is a role for the human. How do you see that move into the near future from a technical manufacturer, but also societal perspective? And maybe I come back a little bit, but you don't have to the fact, as you said, you're a foundation-based company. Robert Bosch was the inventor, and specifically asking, do you see your competition on a global scale going for a similar approach where the human has a role? Or do you see that maybe other parts of the world, other companies will be going for the more autonomous approach with maybe less humans? That's only one piece. I'm asking you really, where do you see this moving?
Well, you have a very broad, and you've brought in everything, right? The foundation always. From Robert Bosch, the far future, and oh my gosh. Okay, let me think about a few dimensions. First of all, over time, we will become more confident, right? And we will maybe have lesser human in the loop. But also over time, we see in all major geographies, the workforce, I've just seen a stat on LinkedIn, some article, where in all, other than in the US and China and in Europe, the workforce is reducing drastically in the next, you know, decade. So we will need that. We will need that to remain as productive as we are today, because we have lesser people in the workforce. And I think it's also a great opportunity for Europe in particular, right? Where we have a high cost of labor and we can bring production in Europe back to world competition, let me say, right? So today a bit challenged, but like this, we can bring it back, I think. And in the agentic space, it's hard at the moment to differentiate the glossy showcase, you know, and that is maybe technologically not very grounded, and differentiate that from, you know, industrial grade quality. I think many, many software companies underestimate what it takes to make industrial robust systems. You know, that's where we feel is our place. I think this can help our society a whole lot in the long run to maintain and increase the production and hence quality of life that we have here.
Sounds great. You know, that's why I was asking you. I was sure, I was confident that you had a view. So thank you very much for sharing that view. Now, final question. Tell us a little bit about your team, the people working in your area, in your team. Where are you based? Are you looking for talent in this specific area? And if so, if there's any listeners say, oh, that sounds great, what is the kind of persons, the kind of capabilities that you are interested in?
We have a great team in place, right? We've done so many production systems, so many data, you know, digital twin projects, data projects that lead to digital twins. We have a great skill in place. We're in the center of a production hub with so deeply rooted. And we have a team in place in Germany. We're also in India and in China. And if anywhere we now want to, you know, expand, we really want to expand on the go-to-market side. So we've won. With in our new strategy that we now work in since 6 months, we've been winning a few customers externally for agentic AI and for semantic data management, semantic stack, and we want to accelerate that now. So we are currently open. We have a global sales leader open. And well, I mean, if anyone is on this podcast, has a strong background in SaaS selling in the manufacturing sector, you know, and know how to scale and build sales organizations, I'd be happy to hear, you know. And generally, if you're excited about manufacturing data and agentic AI, we always are happy to read good CVs. So
perfect. Who knows? We will put the details of your Bosch Connected Industry in the show notes. Norbert, thank you very much. Thank you very much for having shared your experience and your view just now on where Bosch Connected Industry is moving with your manufacturing co-intelligence. Very interesting. Thank you very much. See you soon.
Well, thank you for the conversation. It's been nice. Thanks for inviting me. And I'm then looking forward to listen to it. Or maybe not. I don't know if I will listen to it myself. But thank you so much, Peter.
You're welcome. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.